Hello, friends, and welcome to the latest episode of the StoryForge podcast, where we collect and share the stories of people who make things that matter to the world. I'm sorry. I am frustrated. I just thought I recorded a perfect version of this episode, and I've uploaded it, and I started promoting it, and I went back and listened to it, and the file got corrupted. So I'm sorry. I had to re-record this whole intro and redo some of the work here. So this has been a little frustrating, but it's going to be worth it because this is an episode I've been sitting on for quite some time. It's a conversation I had with an old friend a while ago, and I think I've delayed it just because of how much it means to me personally. I met Charlie Haldahl on my first trip to St. Andrews in Scotland with my dad. We played golf. We sipped whiskey. We saw a couple of celebrities, movie stars even, that paid. And then we paid homage to the home of the game we loved more than anything together. The game we played together. Before, with my grandfather. After, with my son. The game connected us deeper than I can probably describe. And this place we'd never been meant more than either of us could ever say. And Charlie and his wife Ray welcomed us home. And for that, I will be eternally grateful. A lot has changed since our first trip there, and our first once-in-a-lifetime journey turned into a multiple trip, adopted family reunion of sorts. My dad and I had been back numerous times, and even played golf with Charlie and all that. I lost my dad about 6 years ago now, so I think that's why what made this conversation hard to listen to again. But Charlie and Ray ran a guest house, a B&B called Clevedon House on Murray Street in St. Andrews, across the street from a restaurant called Ziggy's. If you've ever been there, you'll know where it is. Less than a 9-iron from the 18th green at the Old Course. They've retired, sold Clevedon before the pandemic hit. They're fortunate that way. And the business in town, the hospitality industry in town, has changed significantly since then. Largely because of the pandemic. But Charlie has so many fantastic stories of their experience and what makes a good inn and a good innkeeper and a good guest and a good hospitality industry, a good golf industry in the home of golf. And that is what they made that matters for this story. There are times in your life when you meet people who you instantly recognize, people you think you must have known in another life. Charlie and Ray are two of those people for me. I hope you enjoy this one as much as I did.
With the connections I've made in St. Andrews through the Clevedon guest house, I've met quite a few interesting people.
Right. I have to imagine. I want to get to that too. But you, I mean, well, how are you doing now? I saw
I'm
you
good.
Happily retired is the quote.
Happily retired, professional grandfather. I'm just an Uber driver for the grandkids for football training. Pick up school when it's raining.
Excellent.
Take my wife to work, which is you'll find that a bit strange, but she works in the library now, and she's happy. It's just a job that she wanted to do just to keep her brain active.
Right.
So she just works part time, 3 days a week.
Yeah.
I am up in the morning, get breakfast done, tidy up, golf if I can, if the weather's good.
Yeah.
And general, just house husband.
That's good. That's all right, though. That's. I'm envious a little bit of that.
It was very difficult to get used to not waking up in the morning at 6 and getting breakfast for 12 golfers and going through my day, you know, looking after people and making a living out of something, a sport that I really love. And that's what Clevedon was all about.
Right. Well, that's a hard, you know, and well, you tell me, I mean, I've always seen it, the hospitality industry as being really sort of hard work.
It's changed since COVID. I mean, you mentioned COVID having a great effect on the hospitality sector, especially.
Yeah.
Because guest houses were not designed as hotels in the early days, in the 1880s when these houses were built.
Right.
Only one door going in is the same door as the exit door.
Right.
When COVID started, they made up a rule that you cannot have people coming in and out the same door.
Oh, wow.
Which is impossible for Clevedon. So Clevedon, I think they had to close for possibly the biggest part of a year, year and a half.
Wow.
We managed to get out of Clevedon. Well, certainly not get out of Clevedon. I don't mean to say it in that way, but we sold just 3 months before COVID hit. Oh, so we handed over Clevedon to the Dunvegan Group.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the Dunvegan Hotel.
I am, yeah.
So they use it for just like an annex house just to use for extra beds.
Right, right.
But I've got to say, since the hotel's opened up again, St. Andrews has lost its sort of B&B feel in that they just do Airbnb. There's not a lot of B&Bs now have actually got hosts that live in the property who you can get advice, you can get, you know, you can get any golf course that you wanted for advice. There's nobody living in the premises. So what Airbnb is, you just arrive, get into the property, you've got a bed, you've got a shower. There's no breakfast. You've got a fridge in the bedroom.
Right.
It's got a little bit of milk or whatever.
And everything's sort of up to you.
And that's it. So, I mean, we feel as though we had the best years, whereas we were living on the premises. We kind of reacted, you know, we were very much on site all the time, helping the visitor with all his requests for whatever questions they had. And, you know, we used to drive the golf clubs. We used to even give golf clubs when they didn't turn up at the airport.
You know, well, that's I remember that because I remember our first trip there, because I always thought of St. Andrews as being sort of a once in a lifetime trip for us. It's sort of, you know, it's in your head anyway. The first time you go, it's off the beaten path. You don't get there unless you're going there. You're not passing through on the way to somewhere else. And so I remember, you know, the story I tell is we had my dad and I were working at the same company, and there was a big event in Edinburgh. So I said to my dad, you know what? It's not too far from Edinburgh. And he said, what? And I said, well, St. Andrews is just an hour-ish up the road. You know, and he said, you book it and we'll stay an extra week. We'll stay an extra week. And I'm like, okay. So I started researching and I sent emails out to a handful of places.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the first one to respond. And with the most detail and the most sort of friendly engagement and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And from that moment through our stay was one of the, maybe the most unique and enjoyable, certainly golf vacations of my life.
Oh, you're going to make me cry.
Maybe any trip, really. I mean, just authentically. I think you and Ray gave us an experience that was much more than we expected.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Airbnb difference. You know, the recommendations for where to eat, where to go to see things, some tea time reservations, all that. You know, and we ended up, I don't know if you remember this, we ended up getting in. We played the old course. We had played North Berwick the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up playing going out as singles on the old course one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got in the lottery for the next day. So my dad and I were able to play the old course 2 days in a row, which was
beautiful.
which was just fantastic. You know, I mean, it's kind of a unique thing, I think.
Oh, it's the mecca, isn't it? I mean, any golfer worldwide needs to play St Andrews at some stage of their life.
Right. I think so. And that experience.
And Ray and I, when we bought Clevedon, we recognized that Clevedon had, it was tired. It needed some care and attention. So we decided to make it the standard that if we ever go on holiday or stay in a hotel, this is a standard that we would like. And this is a hospitality that we would expect. When you're taking money from guests, you need to put something back in to make that stay worthwhile. And we kind of got it off to a fine art.
Yeah. I mean, let me talk about that. Because when you bought it, because you were in, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You were in Aberdeen in the bar business or something, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what drew you to St. Andrews?
So I come from a place called Bucky, mm-hmm. where we've now moved back up to. So the beginning, let's say that left school, the fishing was the job that everybody, my father was fishing, my brother fishing. So it was a case of leave school and get straight onto the boats. I was skipper within 3-4 years. We got a big boat built, my brother and I, and we shared skippering that boat. And but during the 70s, maybe late 70s into the early 80s, we found that it was getting a wee bit dangerous. Me personally, there was 5 boats capsized and were lost in the North Sea between 78 and 82. Holy God. And every one of that crew members was friends of the family and personally met myself. So I decided 82, that was enough. I am not going to. So I went offshore and built my sort of career into the offshore drilling side.
Oh, okay.
So I was on the drilling sector.
I did.
Mostly Derrickman.
Okay.
But then I was widowed. My wife passed away because of asthma. And so then 2 kids needed more of my attention. Mm-hmm. So I had to bring up a 7-year-old and 11-year-old who are both doing really well now, and decided to come on the beach. Bought a business, which was a bar, built the business up to a level that was comfortable enough to say, well, let's get rid of it now. It's that's 11 years. By this time, I've met Ray. We're married now, and we decided to take a trip to St. Andrews because I had this feel that maybe a bed and breakfast there would be a good idea. Because both of us were meeting at nighttime. She had her job, I had the bar business, and it was not the hours that a new married couple would have was ideal.
Right.
And we happened to stay next door to Clevedon House. Now this is going back to 98. And we happened to have breakfast with the owners of Brownlee's. And I said to them, look, I might be in the market for B&B. Is there anything coming up? And they said, oh, yeah, 2 doors down, Clevedon House. So I rang the bell and we looked through it. And I went, this is us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it started.
That's fantastic. And, you know, so how was, I imagine, a lot of what you learned in the bar business, you were able to, as far as like taking care of customers and providing.
It's a totally different feel. Handling golfers and handling drunks is two different.
I suppose so.
When you watch a guy coming in at 6-7 o'clock and now his money is in your till, but he's drunk now, you got to be nice to the guy. You got to appreciate the fact that he's now going home skipped. And you need to smile, but at the same time be strong enough and understand that maybe a taxi is your next destination. handling golfers, a little bit different.
Yeah.
You give them the time of day, you give them information, you give them a good breakfast for a start, and steer them on their way. And because of my love for the game, I managed to play most courses in Fife, so I had a general knowledge of the good courses, the easier courses. Guys on a budget would say, look, what's the course between like 40, maybe £60? I mean, the old course now is nearly, I don't know if it's 280, is it? I'm not sure.
Something like that. It's, yeah. It's,
you know, King's Barnes, 300. But there was a lot of guys that just came on a budget and wanted to play like the Ely or London Lynx, or so I would steer them onto these courses.
Yeah. I mean, we played Ely one time, and I loved that. I thought that was a great
I played experience. Ely with you.
Yeah. Yeah. You and me and my dad, we played Ely. Mm-hmm. It was, breezy, as I recall. But I just remember being a beautiful little. I ran into a Scottish person here who described it as a lovely walk on the sea.
It's one of the best courses down there, actually. So, yeah. That's how it was. And
it's fantastic.
Yeah, meeting people through the 20 odd years that we were down there, we had such great memories, and we now use it. I'm still a member.
Okay.
And I've still got my full ticket. So I use it maybe a couple of times a month just to get down there and play the medal. And I played King's Barnes last week, which was a past captain's day out.
Oh, that's fun.
It was just fantastic.
I enjoyed King Barnes. I only played it the one time, but I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. You need a second mortgage to play it now if you're not getting this.
Yeah, well, yes, when you're traveling from here too, it gets pricey in a hurry. But that's it.
It's access to the courses that are the main factor in St Andrews because of my residency. My resident tickets, I had not free access, but my ticket was more or less the same price as one round.
Oh, okay.
Just because I lived in St Andrews.
Right.
So when I get free points, I used to take guys out and use the point system, which is a quarter of the green fees using my point system. So there was times that, we had cheaper golf than what is normal.
Well, that's sort of how I found you in the first place. Cause I started when I first started researching our trip, you know, you start looking, cause I mean, if you haven't been, and you only know it from watching the Open or the Dunhill TV, what, the Old Course Hotel and you know, the Russex Hotel, cause they talk about them all the time. Yeah. So you start there and you look at that and you say, wait, how much are you charging for this? And I say, okay, there's got to be a different way. And I thought, you know what? Because we had done quite a bit of traveling in Ireland. We have cousins over there and did the bed and breakfast route in Ireland a lot. And so I was like, yeah, that's a great way to go. And I've always been a big proponent of it just because of the local influence, the local, you know, you feel connected to where you're visiting as opposed to just a hotel guest, you know? And of course it was a much more affordable way to go than the 5-star hotel on the 17th.
Correct.
But I remember a couple of things, cause we, the RNA were having their matches when we were there the first time. Well, I guess both times really. We were there in September.
And, September.
Yeah, and we ran into, because you had a guest staying there who was playing partners with Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was all exciting for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I met Sean Connery quite a few times, and he still owes me, he won't be able to pay it now, but he owed me £280.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm not sure you're going to get that
square. There's not a lot of guys can square up to Sean Connery and come off as a winner, but I tried.
That's what
it was. this is, and I knew it exact year because the RNA in 2004 was 250 years old. And every big year they have royalty to be captain.
Okay.
So our good friend Prince Andrew was captain in 2004. Okay. And he had booked Walden House, the whole guest house, which is the guest house next door to the Russocks. That's the RNA's B&B.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they only use it for captains and for distinguished guests.
Right.
Sean Connery's booked into room 3, along with Donny Grant and Jim Loughries and all my usual guys. And he phoned me from Bermuda and he said, I would like to know who all is staying at Clevedon when I'm there. And I said, Sean, yeah, no problem. Room 1 is Donnie and room 2 is John Clappison, blah, blah, blah. And I went through each room and I went, why do you want to know? He says, because I don't like, I'm just making sure there is no woman staying. I said, and why would that be? He says, I don't like getting stared at when I'm having my porridge in the morning. I said, well, that's fair enough.
So
he turns up and he turns up at the door and Michael Medwin, the actor from his doubles partner, he takes 2 strides from Sean's car into my door and he's like, I would like you to come in and explain to Charlie and Sean what you are doing. And I'm like, what's the problem here? Sean, come on in. And he says, no, I've actually had to cancel. Now, Sean, that's a pathetic Sean Connery. The Prince Andrew group had cancelled Walden House for the whole week. So this was the RNA's way of getting all the VIPs to fill up their rooms.
Oh, I see.
Lastminute.com, you see. So Sean's trying to tell me at the door, Charles, I'm sorry, but Walden House, they've got a room there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently I didn't have a fax machine in my room, which Sean Connery needed to keep up with business. This is long before mobile phones were taken
over. Right, right.
And I was absolutely livid. And so was Michael Medwin.
Right. Sure.
So next day, I'm in the RNA, I'm playing with Don Grant, and in comes Sean Connery. And he says, oh, I would like a word with you. And I says, no problem. I would like a word with you too. You're only 280 pounds. He says, it's ridiculous. You'll manage to get that room filled up with the rest of it. I says, well, that's for me to worry about, Sean. It's now, I've only got 7 bedrooms, taken 1 bedroom out. If I don't get paid for it, this is the busiest week of the year. And he says, can I not just buy you a drink instead? Which he did.
Very good.
I still never got paid.
But you have the story to tell.
If any of his family are listening to this, I'll give them my address and my phone.
Very good. Very good. So, but it's interesting because, so St. Andrews, well, let me ask you, did you have, was it exclusively golf guests or was it all types of guests?
I mean, St. Andrews has got, what is it now, 6,000 students.
Right.
So when the golf stops, the students take over the town and from September through to March, you've got parents, you've got the lecturers, you've got Marcus from the university. You can be busy all year round.
Terrific.
But yeah. Having a busy season like Clevedon, we tended to just do the 10 month. We stopped to get odd jobs done to the house and take some time off and visit family. So yeah, we had a lot of university contacts that use Clevedon in the non-golfing season.
For the non-golfing season. Yeah, and it's interesting because golf is so different there than it is here in America. You know, it's especially like here, public golf is one thing, and then private golf is sort of the fancy courses are mostly the private courses, yeah, and their equity membership. So the members own the course. Whereas in St. Andrews, like the old course is public land, and yeah, all the seven links courses are public land. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So there are, I don't know how many clubs there are who have certain times on it. There's the RNA, the new, yeah, St. Andrews Club.
Yeah, the three main clubs are RNA, New Club, and St. Andrews Golf Club. Mm-hmm. And they would share tee times on all the courses for their members. So say that the New Club would have the old course exclusively on a Saturday four times in a year. They have the Spring Medal, Summer Medal, Autumn Medal, and Winter Medal. So we would have, say, in the summertime, from 6:30, first tee time, until something like 5:30, 6:00. But during the wintertime, obviously, with the hours being squeezed, first tee times would possibly be 7:30, maybe. And then the last tee time was 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon because of, right, the daylight hours.
Right.
So not so much golfers can play, obviously, in the winter months.
Right.
But yeah. So the RNA, they take the old course to be their number one playing course, although they do play on the other castle. We've got access to the King's Barnes through deal that the RNA made with the King's Barnes owners, that they invested $2.5 million into King's Barnes initially, mm-hmm, on the understanding that Lynx ticket holders would get access, not free, but they would have access once a year. So, right, yeah.
Right. Terrific. I remember playing because I played the on one of my follow-up visits, because no large part thanks to my first experience there, I realized St. Andrews was not a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me.
Yeah.
And I ended up with David and Paul Kimber, who was working with him at the time.
Okay, yeah.
I played with the two of them on the new course. And I remember just really enjoying the new course and thinking that's great. And they both said the same thing as we were sort of finishing. How many of the last few holes? They said, you know, if this course did not sit right next to the old course,
yeah,
it would be one of the top courses in the world.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't disagree.
Tom Morris Sr.'s only St. Andrew course. He designed it. And him and his team, I mean, they didn't have any caterpillar machines or big diggers at 1870, 1880, was it? So it was bucket, spade, and sheer sweat and hard toil.
Right.
They removed all the gosh that the new course. And the reason being, the old course was getting a lot of play at that time because of the popularity of the game. So Tom designed the new course to take a lot of traffic off the old course.
Right.
And it's the only way they had in them days, they reversed the course to an anti, so you played the wrong way around, okay, to give parts of the fairway rest and a chance to grow, okay? So you can imagine playing from the first tee at the old,
right,
to play onto the 17th green.
Right.
You play off the 18th tee down to the 16th green alongside the left. So you're playing it in reverse.
Right. That would be really interesting.
So the ball, all the divots that's coming out on a reverse course are absolutely not used when the course is played clockwise, anti-clockwise.
Anti-clockwise, yeah. And so the bunkers hide.
The RNA put this on. The Lynx do this every year,
right?
To give golfers a chance to play it anti-clockwise.
That's cool. Have you done it?
Oh yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, all the bunkers have to face the opposite direction, right?
It gets a bit crazy down by the loop,
Right.
8, 9, 10, where it's like you're playing a cross. And, but it's, I wouldn't like to keep my handicap on it.
Right. 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 Right.
But a lot of the bunkering is not shaped
right
for that reverse course. A lot right. of the bunkers are, so when you get into the bunkering, when you're playing the course in reverse, you've got a sheer face of a bunker instead of, you know, the 60 degrees.
Right, right. So it's hard. It's more important to stay out of them.
It's fun.
That's got to be cool. That's got to mm-hmm. be fun, though. I mean, but that's the thing about golf is it's so, mm-hmm. You know, unique. I mean, you guys over there, you play, and I learned this playing in Ireland as well. The members tend to play like a Stableford more often than we do here.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. we play stroke play all the time, metal play all the time. And so it's me among my buddies, we play match play.
Yeah.
But, you know, the clubs don't play the Stableford stuff very often. And so
no.
you guys play, it's a bit more, it's different every time.
Yeah. Play. But it's like the Ryder Cup. Americans don't like to play foursomes.
Right.
But that's the game that Tom Morris and Kidd and young Tom Morris used to play on their matches at, say, North Berwick and
right.
when they traveled. So it's alternative shots.
Yep. I love that because they did a version of that when I grew up working as a caddy at a place called Somerset Hills in New Jersey. And that was how usually one day a weekend they would play some version of foursomes.
Yeah.
They might have everybody hit a tee shot and then they pick their best yeah. tee shot and then play alternate from there. But they yeah. would play some version of that. And that was and it was great for the caddies because people got around quicker.
Yeah.
But it was fun, you know. It's a sport that anybody can play pretty much your whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I looked up Bucky Golf Club
when I found out
you were living. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I got to check this place out. So I have the next trip over there. I got to make sure.
Well, that's no problem. We have loads of rooms for you. You're talking about foursomes. When you were here in September, the RNA, they host the largest game, and it's in the Guinness Book of Records. This year, there were 690 players. Okay, it's in the third week of September. After all the singles, doubles, and their cups, and the RNA play against the town. Okay,
oh, that's got to be fun.
And it's only recently that ladies have been invited into the game, so the ladies' clubs are now invited.
Right.
Now, I had a good relationship with all my RNA members who are the Canadian crew, and that you mentioned Don earlier on. So you have dinner in the RNA upstairs, okay? You have the odd glass of wine, maybe, if you're so inclined. Then you're on the tee at 12:30, 1:00. You play foursomes, and your score goes against either the RNA or the town. Mm-hmm. In the year I was captain, we play for the Bobby Jones cask, which is like a cigar box.
But okay.
In my year when I was captain, 2008, the town won. Okay. Then the year after, the RNA won, which was the first time in 19 years. So the RNA have managed to pick up two or three good results this last 10, 15 years.
Okay.
But it's a day of celebration. It's a day of inviting your RNA opposite to your club.
Right.
So there is a lot of beer drinking, a lot of toasting life.
Yes.
And friendship. And yes, you meet the odd Sean Connery and Michael Medved sitting having a beer in the other clubs. And it's good fun.
Right. But that's kind of the theme here too. I mean, it's because you came down and you created, I mean, my Clevedon experience, you know, and maybe this is unique. I don't know. Cause I remember when my dad and I stayed there, we came in one day, we had played Crail, I think, and it was howling wind, and we came in, we were windy and tired. Mm-hmm. And we went to walk up the stairs, and you were sitting in your office, and you looked like you had just had a hard phone call with somebody. And you looked at us, and you know, we walked up, we were getting cleaned up, we were going to go have dinner somewhere. A few minutes later, you saw us and asked, "Hey, you guys were here for business, weren't you?" And we said, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you have your jackets with you?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well," and you invited us to your club. So you invited us down to the new club.
Okay.
So we put our jackets on, we walked down. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
You know, before long, we had a whiskey there, sitting, looking out the window at the old course. And then we walked up, and you said, "Oh well, let's pop into the other one." And we popped into the St. Andrew's Club,
yeah,
and did the same thing. Very different crowd, by the way.
Oh yeah,
at least that day. And yeah, and then you know, at one point we were walking back, and I wanted to repay the favor because you wouldn't let us buy anything. And I said, "Well, we were walking by the Dunvegan." I said, "Well, let's pop in here. Let me at least return the favor." Mm-hmm. "Oh, no, because you had an argument with one of the caddies, I think." And he didn't want to go in. And I'm like, "No, well, oh, come on." And he said, "Okay, fine." So you came in, we had a drink there. And before long, you were arm in arm with the guy you had the argument with. And we walked out. And then you bought us dinner at Ziggy's that night too, and I was like, "Holy cow, this is like crazy." I mean, this is I'm sure not everybody's every guest's experience in Cleveland was like that, but it was one of the most memorable traveling things we've ever had, and. You know, and then I.
No, your dad was a special guy, and we just sort of clicked.
Yeah.
You know, his interest in golf, and you know, miss him. You know, so. Oh,
yeah.
And we miss St. Andrews in that every day was a different challenge, a different group of guys. We would come and see guys come and go. There was not a lot of issues that we had.
Right.
During our 20-odd years.
Right.
And it was great. And people like your pop and yourself, it was a joy and a pleasure to look after you.
It was, and it's the same.
You did buy me a whiskey. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Say again?
You did buy me a whiskey, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. It was a good night. So, I guess my question is, because you have all these people come through, and you have to have some people who come back, maybe with frequency.
Yeah. But I've got a great story that I look back with fondness. So Gifford Nielsen, who was a quarterback, he's Mormon, so which doesn't make any difference to the story, but I met him in Houston through a mutual friend of ours, and he was a member at Shadowhawk.
Yeah.
And when we pitched up at Shadowhawk in Houston, He said to us, "Look, Charlie, there's this very special guest here today. He's a member. It's the past president." And he says, "I've got to tell you, if Mr. Bush wants to come over and talk to us, please don't call him George. Please don't call him Mr. Bush. He always likes to be called, and this is etiquette here. It's Mr. President, okay?" So I'm thinking, that's okay. So we walk in there, and George Bush, number 41.
Yeah.
His wife Barbara was like two tables down. She was out sitting with a little terrier dog. The security guys were in the next table. And Giff shouts over to past president, "Hey 41, how's it going?" So George Bush actually stood up and went, "Hey, Giff, how's it? Come over." So I actually stood and talked with George Bush for about 15, 20 minutes. He landed up saying that my friend Kohler has just bought a house, bought a hotel over there, hasn't he? And I said, well, yes, that's the Old Course Hotel.
Yeah.
I think he bought it for something like $48 million. And then Giff turned to him and said, hey, but Charlie's got a place just not far up from the R&A. And George Booth said, yeah. He says, I'm a member of the R&A, but I don't get over there as much as I would like.
Yeah.
And then the conversation went dead for about 10 seconds. And I went, Mr. President, can I say something to you? And he says, yeah, what is it, son? If Kohler can't put you up in the Old Course, you know, always got a place. And he took a hold of his shoulder and he squeezed him. I think I'll take you up on that, son. And he says, how do you know the GIF? So that was Gifford Nielsen's nickname, right. GIF. And I said, well, I met him through a mutual friend, you know. And he said, you stick around with GIF, you're going to meet some interesting people, I'll tell you. So we played with him. He's got three times, one security time, mm-hmm. that security guards go out and check things over, and then right. he played. And then the next tea time, so we played in the second tea time, because right. security guards knew us, and we stopped and chatted all day, and it was just a fantastic experience.
That's fantastic. Well, but that's the thing, you meet, when you're in a place like yeah. St. Andrews that attracts so many different people yeah. for different things, you've got to cross paths with all sorts of people.
But there's a follow-up. So Giff, he calls us up, and so he's now in St. Andrews. He didn't stay with me this time. He's staying at the Fairmont with a group of business and sports people from Houston area. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bagwell,
mm-hmm.
Roger Clemens.
Oh, boy.
So you've got all these guys, and they're across playing Renaissance, and then they're coming to St. Andrews. And he's on the phone to me, and he says, Charlie, any chance of getting the Old Course tea time for my friends? And I'm like, how many friends have you? He said, well, there's actually five of us can play tomorrow. A long story short, I have got access to the dark time if we cannot get on during the day. So a resident of St. Andrews can go down to the starter at 6 o'clock in the morning and book, say, the 5 o'clock tea time.
Okay.
You're never guaranteed daylight
right.
for the full 18,
right.
all depending on the speed of play in front of you, obviously.
Right.
So I said, look, Giff, come down at 4:30 and I'll try and organize something. So anyway, I'm down there and I'm speaking to the starter. The only drawback being, you need to play with the three guests that you've invited.
Right.
There's another three guys. There's six of them.
Yeah.
And I said, there's no way I can guarantee that these guys will get second tee time. And I've got a photograph here. I don't know if you can. So do you know these guys?
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
So that's Giff.
Yeah.
Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
This is my four ball.
That's fantastic.
So when I can use points. So I use points for Giff and the other two guys just hand it. I don't know who these guys are, just right. Giff's friends.
Right.
So the other two guys come over to me and said, could we not play behind you? And I said, look, the starter has already explained that the resident has got to play with the other guys. So I'm sorry, you might not get a game here. Anyway, we play away. So we're walking down to play our second shots onto one, and I right. turn around, and there's balls coming firing down, and I thought, yes, they've got a game. Who are these guys anyway? This was Todd and Scott Miller, Johnny Miller's two boys, and another. So every green, every tee that we're on, we're looking back. And these balls are coming in, spinning back. And, you know, I thought, these guys can play. I think Todd was off +2 or +3.
Wow.
Anyway, so this is my group. I didn't know who Danny Ainge was. Giff said he's a famous sports person. He's wearing the Celtic.
I remember with Danny Ainge.
So invited them back into the new club. So we're all sitting there having a drink, and then he explained who he was, and I went, "Wow!"
Yeah.
So then we do the same thing as you and your dad and I did when it ended up Dunvegan on the way home.
Right.
And all these Americans are going, "Danny Ainge," are all going, "We worship."
Right.
And I didn't know that the Johnny Miller's sons behind us. I didn't know, you know. And I said, so we're sitting in the bar, and I think it was Todd was Brigham Young's selector for athletes for the university at that time. Yeah. And he was like, I said, how did you get started to give you a tea time? Because it was a three ball. Uh-huh. I mean, we came down 17, 18 and near dark.
Right.
And they were playing 18 in the dark. Uh-huh. And he said, well, you told us, Charlie, that you can't bung them, which means, you know, give them a couple of hundred to themselves. I says, because I explained how you'll get me in trouble.
Right.
You'll get the start in trouble. But what he did was he asked for a bottle of water out of the fridge. And the starter says, yeah, no problem. But, and he gave him 50 and said, keep the change. So then the starter went, you guys are playing.
That's funny. I like that.
That was a fun day.
I like that. That's a lot of fun. So you got, I mean, and you have, there's a sizable event that goes on there from time to time. So
the
like
Open.
The Open was this summer.
Yeah.
I know you said you were on the
marshalling.
You were marshalling. Yes.
Yeah.
What's it like? How does the town change when that comes in? It's like the circus coming to
town. The town stops existing. From a normal nice place to stay than one of hustle and bustle, the shops, the restaurants, the bars, everything's chock-a-block with people, as you can imagine. Accommodation is near impossible to get because the big corporate companies, they take over the B&Bs.
Right.
Three opens that we did, we had photographers from Time Magazine and Sports Illustrated. Because they wanted access to the course, just walking. You can imagine traffic being quite a problem. Parking is a problem. But the whole town welcomes the Open, obviously. But and the RNA, when they do something, they do it well.
Right.
I put my name into marshal this year, which is the first time I've done the marshalling, because I was always involved with the golf club that right. I was affiliated with. So. Because you can imagine a golf club needs policing as well. People milling around and trying to get dinners. And so anyway, I was on the second the whole week.
Right.
And I had the pleasure of being there at 7 o'clock in the morning when Tiger came through and Rory McIlroy, Fitzpatrick, they're all there first thing in the morning just to get around them on the practice. So Rory McIlroy, he wrote across my shirt, you know, his signature. And then I got Matt Fitzpatrick across this side. So then the chief marshal was doing his rounds and he went, what's that on your? I said, well, it's Rory. And he says, you obviously haven't been reading your manual. You're not supposed to. I said, look, mate, it was 7 o'clock in the morning. I gave that jacket to my golf club here, and it was sold on auction for £255 to give to the junior section of Strathlin Golf Club.
Fantastic.
Along with my Quiet Please sign. So it was quite an experience. I could have been done without Sunday. The stewards were asked if they could do Sunday. And I'm like, nah, no problem. So we'll do the 18th. Well, Rory had to eagle for a playoff. So then the course had to be kept open. So we were all lined up. So when he missed, obviously, his par, we looked around. There must have been 1,000 people jumping over Swilk and Byrne. They had bashed over the or forced over the fencing at the 17th. Oh. They were running on top of the 17th green, taking chunks of grass. They were trying to steal a flag.
Oh my gosh.
Three broken ankles and one broken leg with guys jumping over the Swilkin Bridge, Swilkin Burn.
Oh my.
Okay. And so we're standing in a line beside Granny Clark's Wind. Yeah. And we're facing these, and it was like a stampede of buffalo, and they're all coming
like a military operation.
So we're all joined hands as though it's, you know, you're going to stop. No, they didn't stop. They just charged through us.
Oh boy!
And it was scary because there was a woman next to me who came from Scott's Cray Golf Club, and she was standing there with a quiet police sign. I said, "Well, that's not going to." So it was scary, and that, yeah, the Army have got to do something about the 18th stampede. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But that's a very, again, it's a very different, it's sort of unique to the Open, really, than the scene. Because the, like, PGA Tour events have the ropes and everything, and they really work to keep everybody out. But, so let me ask you, all these experiences, all these great experiences, how do they weigh up against becoming or winning the gold medal for best porridge in the Kingdom of Fife?
Oh, well, that's a fond memory as well. Yeah, it was quite an accolade to get that. I never expected ever to be in the top five, but I made my porridge that day as I do every day, and it so happened to be, I think, Lyle, the guy next to me, okay, you can imagine the hall, I can't remember the name of it just now, but anyway, there was like 100 people there, all the finalists are on stage, we've got like a mobile cooker thing happening, and we were allowed to make two kinds of porridges. So there's nine of us queued up, and I'm like five or six down. The guy next to me, he's making porridge with kippers on the top. He's made his porridge, and he's spreading kipper, sort of fried herring, and then bacon. And then he put drambuie on top of that. So I'm thinking, okay, that's different. So anyway, I do mine, and as you've probably tasted quite a few times. Yes. So when the judges are coming down that line, they took a taste of this herring, porridge, bacon, and drambuie, and one of the judges actually spat it out. So when they came to me, they were more or less saying, "Oh, this is nice." So
we're in the relief.
It was spot. More or less to get the taste out of the. So then they went along to the line, and then the winner is Charlie Clevedonhouse, and it was like, "Wow!" So and I used that recipe, well, my own recipe, every day. I didn't change it, and it was quite a buzz.
I'll tell you, it's funny because I never thought about porridge in my life. You know, I was like, we call it, we don't have anything like it here. We have oatmeal, which is not the same.
Yeah.
And I remember trying it sort of for the first time at your place and being like, okay, I could be convinced. Mm-hmm. It's all right, you know? And then I became a fan of porridge after that.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, but everything sort of about, the experience at Clevedon for us, from the time we arrived to, you know, finding our tee time, finding our way to whatever golf course we were going to play, to, you know, getting a recommendation for a restaurant or whatever, to sitting in the breakfast room, to chatting with you out the back with your cigarette because you weren't allowed to. It just you and Ray made us feel at home, and I think that's really for me anyway. That's kind of the secret to it. And is that, I don't know, can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, it's hospitality that Scotland has always been proud of, is to treat your guests the same way as you would like to be treated when you're traveling, you know. And, you know, we've been places that people have been rude. And say, for instance, we travel quite a bit during the off season to like Dubai, Australia, mm-hmm. To visit family. And well, our favorite place is London.
Right.
But you never get to meet a national. Like, I'm not being racist here. It's just that you do not get to meet the owners of these premises.
Right.
It's just maybe some student that broken English or, you know, Latvian or Polish or
whatever team is
European.
Yeah.
And they've got no interest in you. They just want to do their job. Right. Stamp your room, give you your key, and you're off. There's no like one-to-one,
right?
With, and I just feel like the B&B is a more home from home, as you said.
Yeah, I mean that's it to me. And I mean, even if they're doing a good job, even if they're doing a really good job, you don't have that connection, like you say.
Yeah, yeah.
And some places, it's funny. St. Andrews, and I want to ask specifically about St. Andrews too, because I'll give an example. We stayed in Port Rush. In Ireland,
mm-hmm.
great golf course, a lot of really wonderful people. But you go downtown in Port Rush, and it feels like the Jersey Shore where I grew up. You know? It feels like a honky tonk. Yeah. You know, you kind of feel like people are, you know, trying to take advantage of you a little bit. But you walk through St. Andrews, stay there, and you go in any shop, any guest house, any hotel, any bar. And it's like everybody, you know, kind of knows everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody helps everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a team effort almost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's what it seemed like to me as a visitor. Is that, mm-hmm. what was it like that there, yeah. to be there and have a business, run a business there?
And I think it's pride of the history, proud of the town itself, because As it's well known, it's the home of golf. If you look back to the history of the 18th, 17th century, even when they started hitting bits of stones with a stick and that's how golf developed through the years from the 1800s, 1900s, when you get the Tom Morris era, and transport, I think, brought on the popularity of golf, because then people could travel a lot easier instead of just horse and cart. I mean, when Tom Morris, when they couldn't, I think North Berwick was the furthest they went, and that was by ferry,
right?
From St. Andrews. And you know the story about young Tom Morris. I suppose you've seen the film, mm-hmm. when he was playing North Berwick. He got a telegram to say that his wife was seriously ill,
mm-hmm.
And the tide was wrong for the boat to come back into St. Andrews. So by the time he got home, his wife had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And history will tell you that that's young Tom Morris, his life. I think he lived 2 or 3 years after that, because mm-hmm. he maybe drunk too much. I don't know if he had liver complaints, but I haven't seen the actual history of how his death certificate.
Right.
But being open champion 5 times and at 24 years old.
Right. Well, the story is he died of a broken heart, you know, and that's,
yeah.
there's so much. And that's another thing. And you know, because my cousin's in Ireland, you get this from Ireland too, but in Scotland, there's the soul of the poet about the place.
Yeah.
And there's a poetry to not just the way people speak and tell a story, but sort of the way you live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you've been there since 2008, but in 1908, just to give you the brief history of my involvement with Tom Morris, and it was very much in my heart when I did this. When I was vice captain of the new club, 2007, it occurred to me that 2008 is going to be 100 years to the passing of Tom Morris.
Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Old
yeah.
Tom Morris used to sit downstairs in the new club. Remember I showed you the spyglass and the chair?
Yeah.
And the,
yeah.
So he died on the 23rd of May, 1908.
Wow.
So I went to the RNA and I said to Peter Dawson and Auburn and guys that organized championships, that if I organized Tom Morris 100 years, would they be interested to back me? And they went, yeah, of course. So we got the new course on the 23rd of May, 2008. We had 100 people playing the new course, which was Tom Morris's. We had representatives from all the golf clubs. Prestwick sent a team. All the golf clubs in St. Andrews were equally proportioned for the membership to be a part. We had 24 people from the RNA, 24 from the new club, St. Andrews Golf Club. And on a Saturday night, okay, we had dinner upstairs in the new club for 100 people. And David Joy, who is the actor that does Tom Morris, you know, he gets done up with it. You've probably seen him in the films and the, yeah, and the adverts. You know, he came in to do a huge hour of the history of Tom Morris.
That's cool.
So I'm very much involved in the history of old Tom. And I was very proud when the captain of the RNA actually flew up from London, and he came to me at the end of the speeches and the flowers and everything. And he said, Charles, if the RNA had organized this, they would never have done it as good as you. So that was good.
That's a great compliment. I love that.
So that was 2008. That was one of my best memories of the town.
Oh, fantastic. That's great, though. I mean, there's so much history. It's such a unique place. And even for people who aren't golfers to just sort of absorb, there's a sense walking about there that you don't get in other places. And it's cool. So let me ask you, you know, how much do you miss it?
Oh, heaps. I mean, you want me to cry? You want me to cry on radio?
It's one of those things, you know.
You know, I'm 70 years old now, and, you know, we're not getting any younger. I'm still playing. I've won a couple of competitions this year that I'm very proud to do. And we use now St. Andrews to be a destination for weekends and visit friends. I'm still, as I told you, I'm still a member. I still go down there and play the past captains, the cups and dinners. But then when I drive out of it, when I'm coming home the next day, I'm looking at St. Andrews in the wing mirror and I'm thinking, you know what? Life is great. We've still got that as a memory.
So that was my conversation with Charlie Haldol, keeper of the inn. He was a fisherman, a offshore driller, a bar owner, a hospitality industry pro, a golfer, a father, a grandfather. He and his wife, Ray, even though I don't see them hardly ever in person, I have great love for them and everything they've done for me and my father and our trips to visit them. I have several other interesting stories and interesting clips from this interview on our Patreon site. So if you have any interest in supporting the site that way, you can go to patreon.com/ Making Things Matters, and we have a few special items up there as well. So if you do find yourself enjoying the StoryForge podcast and embracing the idea that making things matters, give us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you listen to these things. It helps others find the show and hopefully enjoy it as much as you do. The StoryForge is presented by NimbleSmith, the content marketing agency. That's NimbleSmith, spelled with a Y, .com. All recording, editing, interviewing, scheduling, and executive producing tasks are handled by yours truly, your host. The podcast would not be possible without the sincerely excellent help of our friend and producer, Anthony Sergi of Dynamic Art and Motion outside of Philadelphia, who makes a number of other fantastic podcasts that matter, including A Guest in the House about all things hip-hop and The Career Chat Room, hosted by HR pro Aaron Sergi. And she has a new podcast that has just launched that's worth listening to. Music for the program is from the Jody Nardone Trio, Lights Will Guide You Home album. If you like the work we're doing, please share the StoryForge link far and wide and tell all your friends about us. And you can always send us questions or suggestions through the Tell Us Your Link, Tell Us Your Story link on the website. Or support us on our Patreon site. You can learn more at patreon.com/makingthingsmatters, as I mentioned a moment ago. Or just shop our store on the website at thestoryforge.com. That's the-story-forge.com, because the other one was taken. And click the shop link at the top of the page. The book, my book, Why Yellow Matters, is also available on the website. So pick that up if you have an interest. Thank you for listening. Be careful out there.
Oh, I'm trying to find my whereabouts. What shall I do when nothing seems to follow through?